We talked last week, or the first week especially, about this book being the unveiling of Jesus Christ. And I can't remember if I read it this week or heard it in a song or seen it or whatever it was, but it struck a chord with me. And it's what I understood was, man, the ultimate unveiling of Jesus Christ will be when He comes as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And that's what this book leads us to. And that'll be a great an awesome time, but it just hit me this week. That will be the ultimate unveiling of Jesus Christ. They will see Him then as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So I just wanted to bring that out before we got started in this thing. Man, it ain't going to jee-haw too good tonight. It keeps wanting to fall down. So, all right. Anybody remember where we at?
2 verse 8.
Anybody remember what we studied last week? Church of Ephesus. It's the apostolic church age, or they left their first love. And so now we're going to get to the second stage of the church age. And the first stage was approximately around 30 AD to 100 AD, somewhere in that time span. And so now we're going to go to the next church age, which is Smyrna, the church at Smyrna. Smyrna is about 35 miles north of Ephesus. So what we're going to learn in these churches also is the churches are going to go north to each other and then move over and then come south to each other, if I got it remembered right. So it's just kind of like a U or a circle that just goes around from one church age to the other to give us the times of the church age. And so remember, as we're studying chapters 2 and chapter 3, we are dealing with the church age, the things which are in the timeline of the Revelation. And so it's the things which are, which is present, what's going on now. And remember, as we study these, it gives us the different time periods of the church age. The first one, as we seen last week, we said was they left their first love, or the apostolic church age. And it was the apostolic church age because they was during the time of some of the apostles was still around. That's why they called it the apostolic church age. So now we come to the second phase of the church age. And the second phase is the church of Smyrna. So let's read 8 through 11. It says, "Unto the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these things says the first and the last, who was dead and came to life. I know your works, tribulation, and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are of a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." May God bless the reading of His Word. And so now, as we get to the second phase of the church age, this is what I call the martyr church age, or some people call it the persecuted church age. And so it's a church age where they are going to be martyred, they're going to be killed, some of them persecuted. And so it's a tough church age. And remember also that we said there are some of each church age in every church age. So there will be some churches during the church age that we are in now, which is the last one. And I think it's the lukewarm church age. But there are some churches during this lukewarm church age that are actually like the martyr church age. They will be some persecuted for being God's children, for being called Christians. And so we know there's a lot of that going on in other countries. It's also getting closer and closer and closer in our country. I know years ago, it's a whole lot different than it is now to be a Christian, isn't it? I mean, years ago, you didn't have no problem from other people when you said you was a Christian. You didn't offend other people. We wasn't in the United States of the offended back then, as we are now. We really offend people now because we are Christian. And so we need to really pay attention to this church age, because it can show us what some of the things are we might face. We might face persecution. We might even face imprisonment. We might even face death. We don't know how quick this can turn around. I forgot to get me some water. All right, so as we go, remember we also said last week that really, there's not really, it don't just go from year 30 A.D. to year 100 A.D. and it stops that church age and then starts the martyr church age. Remember, there's going to be a gradual working while the first church age, as we talked about, the apostolic church age is finishing up. The martyr church age is already starting before the other one finished up. So that it just moves right into its place. As we said, it'll be around 100, probably a little before is when it starts coming in. And then year 100 to 316 A.D. will be basically the timeline for the martyr church age. And so that's the church age we're looking at now. And so it says in verse 8, says, "And unto the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these things says the first, the last, who was dead and came to life." And so what do we see? First off, let's look at the word Smyrna. Anybody ever heard the word Smyrna before?
Georgia.
Well, that's good. That's pretty good. But Smyrna is actually used three other times in the Bible. It's actually the same word as myrrh. Anybody ever heard myrrh? Most people that's heard the Christmas story has heard myrrh happen. Also, if you remember the time that the women was going to anoint the body, they used myrrh to anoint dead bodies. And so it was used at that time too. The first one, as I said, was when the wise men came to see baby Jesus, as in Matthew 2:11. And John, the second time, John 19:29, is when Jesus, well, I forgot to put this one first before the other one, but when Jesus was on the cross and they dipped the sponge in hyssop, they dipped it in Smyrna to give to Jesus, remember, but he refused it. What was it for there? It was used at that time as a painkiller. So when people was on the cross, they could give them that myrrh and it would kill some of the pain. But Jesus denied it. Jesus said, "No, I don't want it." He didn't want to lose his senses. You know, a lot of times painkiller messes with your senses, won't it? Messes up your mind. And so he didn't want to do away with any of the things that he was having to do for our salvation. And the third time is John 20:38 and 39, when Jesus, after Jesus died on the cross, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus took the body of the cross and they made a mixture of myrrh to anoint the body with. So that's the three times that we see the word Smyrna or myrrh, same word. All right? So now let's learn a little bit about Smyrna. Smyrna is probably one of the most beautiful cities in the world, from my understanding. I ain't never been there. I ain't never left this country.
Take word on it.
We'll take their word on it because I'm not going over there now. I ain't like some of the people. Some people ain't feared to go over there now. I'm feared to go over there now. Just be honest. And so, but it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. It's in the country of Turkey. And now it is called Izmir. I-S-M-U-R. That's the modern day town of Smyrna. Actually, the word Izmir means Smyrna, and actually this city was founded, if I'm correct, by Alexander the Great. So most of y'all have heard of Alexander the Great. So he's the one that founded this city. So what we see now is this church age, as I said, is the martyr church age of around 100 to 316 A.D. And so there was a lot of gods that was worshipped in the town of Smyrna. It had all kinds of temples. It had all kinds of gods that you could worship. We're going to see a little bit about how this affects towns and places when we get to that part. But let's just continue on until we get there. And so this is the martyr church age. But we also see something in every one of these letters to the churches that is just great and awesome. What do we see? Well, let's back up first to chapter 2, verse 1. Thank you. It says, "To the angel of the church of Ephesus write, these things says, he who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks in the midst of the seven golden lampstands." In other words, what you remember where this was? We've seen this as a description of Jesus in chapter 1. So every one of these letters that he points to the church, he also gives them a description of himself, showing them that he is also in the midst of their church. But it say there, that the one that holds the seven stars and all that, I'm with you at Ephesus. I'm there. What's this one say? And to the angel of the church of Smyrna write, these things says the first and the last, who was dead and came to life. Another description of Christ in chapter 1 of Revelation. And so here again, Smyrna, you're during the martyr church age, but guess what? I'm with you. I'm going to be right there with you the whole time. And so we're going to find out by these, him saying that he is with all the seven churches during these church ages, then he's going to be with us during our church age, and he's going to be with us as our church, at our church, and the things that we go through for him. And so who is he? Who is his description here in this one in verse 8? The thing says the first and the last. He's the one that's always been, always will be. There's never been a time ever that God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit was not. He's always been. He's always will be. There's never a time. And so you might be going to go through some things, but guess what? I'm the one who was dead. And what? Came to life. You're going to go through a lot of things. You might even face death. But you know what? If you're my child, I'm going to bring you back to life in my presence. You'll be with me in eternity. And so we see that the one that's always been and always will be with them through this time. Even though he's dead, he's showing them, I've suffered even up to the point that you're going to suffer. I suffered unto death. I even refused the hyssop. I refused the myrrh to ease my pain. He's not saying, telling them that they ought to do that. But, you know, it shows us what he went through for us. He suffered greatly. Sometimes when I teach Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, where it says that he went to the cross with joy, I like to describe to the people that what he went to the cross was all about. The thorns, crown of thorns, the beatings, the spitting on, the slapping of the hand was an insult. They slapped him in the mouth, it was calling him a liar. And all these, I didn't plan on this, so I can't remember all these things that he went through. But he went through all these things. And yet, he still loved us. And still, he went through, he was dead. But what? He did arise on that third day. Came back to life. He is the one now that defeated death, hell, and the grave. So by him saying, I was the one that was dead, but I came to life, is showing them, I have defeated death, hell, and the grave. And so whatever you go through during this persecuted church age, this martyr church age, I've already been there, already defeated it. Not that I've just been there, I defeated it. So you have victory over everything that you're going to face. And so we as children of God, the things that we face and we go through in our life, Jesus has already defeated.
Now, Jimmy, that's why Paul tells us that we were dead with Christ, we will live with Christ.
Yep.
Crucified with Him, we will live.
Everybody with us? I didn't want to talk over there because this thing wouldn't pick it up. So. All right. Y'all good with that thing? All right. Let's go to verse 9. It says, I know your works, tribulation, and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blaspheme of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. So here we see, first off, we want to understand about this martyr church age. Am I loud enough? I want to make sure I'm loud enough. So, during this martyr church age, there is no condemnation from God. Every other church age we're going to see, I think every other one, I can't try not to read that. Maybe the missionary church age don't have one, I can't remember. But there's no condemning words during this church age. Why? Because he knows all that they are going through to start with. I mean, he's going to tell them some things that's wrong. But no, he's going to tell them some things that they're going to suffer. But he doesn't have any condemning words for them during this church age. And that's not the way he usually has something to say. Remember last week, we seen he had a nevertheless. But he don't have a nevertheless on this one.
Mine says that Smyrna and Philadelphia were the only two he didn't review.
Okay, Philadelphia's the other one. That's the missionary church age. I couldn't remember if they did or didn't. I try not to study too far ahead because then I jump ahead in my teaching and forget where I was at. So that's, I try to stay pretty close to where I'm at. So thank you for that. And so what's he say? He said, I know your works, tribulation and poverty. In other words, first off, he says, I know your works. So what's that mean? What did we say it meant last week? He knows what's going on in the church. So if he knows what's going on in the church, he knows what's going on in each life. Because each life is a part of the church. But also he knows what's going on in each individual church. He knows what's going on in Ephesus, in Smyrna, in Thyatira, in Pergamos. And so Philadelphia and Laodicea and all these. He knows what's going on in the churches. Why? Mainly because he's there. As we just said a while ago, he's in the church. So if he's in the midst of the church, he knows what's going on in the church. And I tell you what, if I became a member of this, well, let's go back to the when I said I was done with church, don't want it, don't need it, ain't got no use for it. Wasn't going back, was done. You know what, during that time period, I didn't know what was going on in the church. You know why? Because I wasn't at the church. I wasn't in the church. So you don't know what's going on if you ain't there. Well, God's there. Jesus is there. So he knows what's going on in our church because he is here. Unless you are one of the dead churches that he's not got a part of because he's not there because they're dead. And we'll see that later on also. All right? So we see that he knows our works because he's with us. What was next? Tribulation. He knows our tribulation. Now, this is I love this word here because it just gives us a picture that's just so unusual. Actually, the Greek word here is klipsis. C-L-I-P-S-U-S. And this word klipsis is talking about, for example, I would be, if somebody wanted to torture me or torment me or put me in tribulation like this, what it's talking about is I would be laid down and somebody would come and put a rock on me, a rock too big for me to push off of me, but just big enough to not crush me. And so what it's talking about is this rock is just heavy enough just to keep putting pressure and putting pressure and putting pressure till it does eventually kill me. But it doesn't kill me. It doesn't crush me right off the bat. It is a slow process of tribulation. And so what they're going to face is a slow process of tribulation until it finally does kill some of them. All right? So what was next? Poverty. You know, this is pretty good too here. This is another Greek word called tokenia. Now, y'all understand, I don't know Hebrew and Greek, so if I pronounce these words wrong and y'all know the correct way, y'all just raise your hand and say, that ain't right. Here's how you say it. But I'm just going to have to say them the best way I can say them, because I ain't real smart. But it's called tokenia, and it means don't have anything. Now, I could be wrong. There may be some of you in here that's been to a point when you did not have anything. I remember Mom and Daddy talking about when Daddy decided to accept the call to the ministry, he went to Georgia to go to school. And he would serve at churches right across the line in Florida because where he went to school was not too far from Florida. So a lot of the students at the school would serve at churches in Florida. And so he would serve at churches in Florida. And I wasn't born yet, so I don't remember none of this. But he said they would leave out on a Sunday morning because they spent all day since they was going to Florida. They would leave that morning, go to church, then eat lunch with somebody, then go to church, and then eat supper with somebody, and then come back home. So they knew that Sunday they was going to be able to eat. But he didn't know about Monday. Because he said when they left Sunday morning, they didn't have a can, not a can not a single can of food in the house. Not a single bite of food in the house. So I don't really know much about this don't have anything, but Daddy and Mama knew a little bit about not having anything. I mean, I can usually scrub around and find a can of pork and beans or a can of beans or a can of something around the house. I've never seen a day in my life when I didn't have a little bit of something in the house. So they know what don't have anything is. I don't. So this is a word that is really strong to prove a point. And this point is that they did not have anything but what?
You're rich.
But you are rich. What does that mean?
Spiritually,
they was rich. It meant the things of God is more important than the things of the world. When you're spiritually rich, He's going to take care of your physical. Whether you think you're rich, whether you have anything or not, but He's going to eventually take care of that for you. You are rich here means they was rich in things that money can't buy. That's what I read this week, and I said, that's good, I'm going to write it down. It meant they was rich in things that money couldn't buy because they didn't have anything money-wise, but they was rich spiritual-wise. And so they had joy, they had peace, they had happiness, they had contentment, they had eternal accomplishment. And so what does this tell me? The closer that we are with Jesus, the richer we are. The further we are away from Jesus, the poorer we are. So let's don't stay rich and poor on material. Let's stay rich and poor on spiritual. Because that's what's going to last through eternity anyway. Or not through eternity, in eternity, excuse me. And so that's what we should be more concerned with. I read this also, so I wrote it down, so maybe I'll get this right. Someone once said that the churches of the first 3 centuries, the first 300 years of the church age, were marked by material poverty, but spiritual power. But the churches of our day are materially wealthy and spiritually weak. Does that sound like our day? I think it does. You know, the bad part about that is that speaks of us as the church individually. As me, I'm an individual of the church. I'm an individual of God's whole church, but I'm also an individual of Bear Creek Baptist Church. But I am an individual of Christ. And so that speaks also about me. What's important to me? Material or spiritual? And so we need to look at our lives and see how do we feel about this. Also, one of the pastors at Smyrna, I don't know if any of y'all ever heard of Polycarp. Polycarp. I don't know, anybody in here like the Isaacs? If I remember correctly, they sang the song about with him in it, where he was burned. Or they tried to burn him. And so he was burned at the stake in 156 A.D. because he was the pastor of Smyrna. I started to say Smyrna Baptist Church, but that'd be discrimination. He was the pastor of Smyrna Church. And because of his witness, because of the church's witness, he faced tribulation unto death. And so did some of the other people that went to church there. And so, as I said here, Jesus tells them, I know you're suffering. Because what he says, let's read to it. Well, I better back up to finish this verse before I keep going too far. It says, I know your works, tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. I know the blaspheme of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. So what's he showing us here? First off, I think we see, first off, as we said, he knows their suffering. He knows what's going on. But he also knows the things that's been allowed in the church or in that area, not in that city of Smyrna. And so what's been allowed in the city of Smyrna. It says what? I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not. What's he talking about? Well, if we put that in today's time, we'd be talking about people who say they are Christians, but we don't see no evidence. Remember a week or two back, I said if you had to stand before David County Courthouse as a Christian, would there be enough evidence to prosecute you? And so what am I saying here is we've got a lot of people that wants to say they're Christian, but they don't live like they're Christians. And so it's something for us to think about. And so what is he talking about here? They are a synagogue of Satan. There's even some churches in the world today that in my mind, and when I read this right here, would put them in the category of a synagogue for Satan. Because any church that preaches anything other than the gospel of Jesus Christ, then they are a synagogue of Satan. Because if you're not preaching Jesus Christ, you're going against the Bible. And if you're going against the Bible, who are you for?
Satan. There's no right defense.
Right. You know the only thing that's in the middle of the road? It's a dead possum.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of people, especially in this time period, that call themselves middle of the roaders. Well, I don't want to be in the middle of the road. It's like I told y'all one night, I think it was on Wednesday night, there was a hen that wanted to do something different on the farm than everybody else had ever done. Y'all remember this? And so he went to the farmer and asked the farmer, said, what's something I could do that no other hen has done? He said, can I go in the barn? He said, no other hens has done that. He said, can I go in the pasture? He said, no other hens has done that. He said, well, can I do this? He said, no, they've done that. He said, well, what can I do that no other hen has done? He said, well, I ain't sure what you can do. But then the hen said, well, I know what. I'll go out in the middle of 601. You know what the farmer said? If you do, do it quick and stay on the line. So what's he mean? Get about your business and get back off and stay on the line. Make it short and sweet, but stay where you need to be. And that's the way we need to do as Christians. We don't need to be of the synagogue of Satan. We need to be straight down the line and be about our business of what needs to be done so that we are not becoming a synagogue of Satan. Not only does a church necessarily have to be a synagogue of Satan, but an individual can definitely be a synagogue of Satan. Now, I know there's people out there that claim to be Satan worshipers, and they, well, I don't mean they just claim it, they are Satan worshipers. But you know what? There's some people in the world that thinks they're Christian that's never accepted Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, and so they don't have the gospel of Christ in them, and so they are a synagogue of Satan also. That wasn't planned, so that, y'all can toss that out if you don't want it. But. All right, everybody's still with us. I thought we'd get two done today, but I think we're going to be lucky to get the one done. So I thought we'd get two churches. All right, verse 10. Says, do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. And so what are we talking about here? First he says, what? Don't be afraid. That should be some of the greatest words you ever hear from Jesus Christ. Is don't be afraid. Don't fear. Why? Because he's there with us. He's already been through it. He's already faced all the things that we're going to face. And so he's going to be there with us. So don't fear it. And what's going to happen then? It says, do not fear those things which you are about to suffer. Well, that would kind of put some of us on a downer right there, wouldn't it? Because he's pretty much guaranteed you're going to suffer. Because don't fear the things you are about to suffer. It's going to happen. Well, I'm going to tell you, as a Christian, there's going to be some times in your life that you're going to suffer. But you know what? Don't be afraid. Because Jesus is there with you. He's always there with us. And so he's already been through it. And so he says, indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison. Some of you is going to go to jail. Some of you is going to go to prison. I hope everybody here got enough evidence against them. We done talked about that. I hope if you stand before the judge, I hope you don't get the one I was talking about the other week, because I'd have to throw some stones. But you know what? If you stand before the judge, is there enough evidence that the prosecuting attorney, David knows all about this, that the prosecuting attorney would have enough evidence to have a case for you to be thrown in jail because you're a Christian? Something to think about. But what's going to happen? It says, indeed the devil's going to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. So didn't I remember, this word here is different than a lot of times we give it meaning of. Tested don't mean tempted. It's two different words. So tested means we're going, our faith's going to be tested. It's going to make us grow. We're going to grow spiritually when we get tested. But sometimes when we get tempted, if y'all like me, y'all, I hope y'all better than I am probably, most of y'all. But when I get tempted, sometimes I fail. Sometimes I fall. I just going to be honest with you. But you know what? That testing is something that's going to sharpen me. Going to make me a little bit stronger in my faith. Going to make me a little sharper to do the things that God's called me to do. And so don't worry about being tested. All right? And you will have tribulation 10 days. Now, the first couple of times I studied this, I have a problem with this 10 days. But you know, I try to read some people that's a whole lot smarter than me, thank goodness. And so I really had to work on this and had to understand this. But actually, it's not really talking about just a 10-day time period from my understanding of reading others. Now, I'm not a theologian. I can't just give you point blank exact what it is. But from what I'm understanding is, this is really talking about during the church age, especially during this time, around 100 to 316 AD, as we said, there was 10 distinct persecutions of the church. 10 distinct Caesars that persecuted the church. So there was 10 time periods of Caesars that persecuted the church. Alright? Here's the 10. And I'm not going to pronounce these right either. Y'all just have to go with me. Hold on. Nero, Domitius, Trajan, Marcus Aurelius, Severus, Maximinus, Decius, Valerian, Aurelian, whatever that is, and Diocletian. Diocletian was the last. Diocletian is also the one to be considered the worst persecutor of the church during these 10 Caesars. Now I can give you time periods that these men were Caesars if y'all want these. If you do, see me afterwards, we'll write them down for you. But it goes from actually all the way back to 54 AD. But as I said, these time periods lead from one into the other. And so it had already started. The persecution had already started in 54 AD and goes to really 305 is when the last one went out of power. And so what is it saying here? We suffer for Christ, or they was going to suffer, but if we suffer our whole life for Christ, then there's going to be a beginning, but there's also going to be an end to the suffering. So if we have 10 days, whether you want to take the 10 Caesars or not, the 10 days is also showing us that there is a beginning to our suffering for Christ and an end to our suffering for Christ, because when we die or when we get raptured, there's no more to being persecuted for Christ. We're going to be with Him. The suffering's over. I get that out where anybody can understand it.
Yeah, and I've been reading as you've been going through this too, it indicates that there is a set period. And I thought about that a little bit this week. When you know going into something that it's not going to last forever, that's encouraging to help you get through it. You know, you're going to be sick for a week, but you know at the end of that week, so to me, when Jesus says that, it's very encouraging. I got this.
Yeah.
If you want to get through this, there is an end.
Yeah, it reminds me of a ball game we played one time. Whew. We started playing that team, and they were just running around them bases like crazy. By the time it got 33-3 in the fifth inning, we was glad that was the end of that. And you know what? When we're suffering for the Lord, we're going to be glad they say info. We're going to understand that there's actually joy in suffering for the Lord. What did he say? You're rich. What did we say they had a minute ago? Joy, peace, happiness, contentment, eternal accomplishment. So there is joy during these persecutions also. Why? Because we know that we are suffering for the kingdom of God, for Christ. And why? Because it says this right here, that one day we will receive a crown of life. All right? Let's read verse 11. It says, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. So what have we seen here? We need to hear what the Spirit says. We just talked about the suffering. I'm going to give you some of the sufferings. I should have brought it out a minute ago. Here's some of the sufferings under these Caesars that I was talking about a while ago. They would be brought into the amphitheaters at Rome. Some of them would be fed to the lions, hungry lions. Some would be crucified. Some would be covered with animal skins and then sick the dogs on them. They'd be hunted down by dogs because they had them animal furs on them. They thought they was hunting animals. The dogs did. All right. Some would be covered with tar and set on fire. If I remember right, Polycarp was tied to a pole and set on fire. Some was boiled in oil. And like I say, Polycarp was burned at the stake alive. I mean, you know, they don't kill them before they put them on there and burn them. They put them on there and then burn them. So that's some of the things. It's estimated that during this time period of 100 to 316 A.D. that 5 million Christians were martyred. That's an estimation. But 5 million Christians during this time. And so what do we see? He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. This is another beautiful part to each one of these letters. First, the beautiful part about him, his description of himself to us. But then also, here's what you can do. I'm always going to tell you what you need to know. And so if you listen to me, I'm going to tell you the things that you need to know. And so what did they need to know here? What the Spirit says to the churches, he who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. So we're going to have a pop quiz. What's the second death? Now, I've told y'all just about every night we've been here.
Eternal death.
Eternal death. The spiritual death. Eternal death. You will be in the lake of fire for eternity. And we'll see that somewhere around chapter 19 or 20. Those that are cast into the lake of fire. But you know the good part is, he says what? You will not be hurt by the second death. That means you're going to spend eternity with Jesus. You're going to spend eternity in the new heaven, the new earth, and the new Jerusalem with God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. All three. You know what else is going to be there? Because we got a little time to kill. I'm not going to get into the next one. It's going to be such a place that it won't even need the sun, because God's glory is so bright. We won't need the sun anymore. It's got a river of life running from the throne of God down through the middle of the new Jerusalem and the new earth. It comes out the four walls of the city. The city, New Jerusalem, will have four walls. And it's got, the river breaks into four ways of coming out the wall, coming down from the throne of God. Beside the river is a tree of life with 12 different fruits. By the way, one of them's meat flavored. It's got to be pig flavored. And you know what? Let me just go ahead and tell you up front now. It's not going to be boring in heaven. You know, a lot of people down through the years, I don't want to go to heaven and just sit around on a cloud and play a harp all day. That's not what you're going to be doing. First thing you're going to be doing is worshiping, praising, honoring God. But you're also going to have a job. I can't get into all this because I ain't studied it real deep yet, but I have read a little bit about it. A lot of the things that God has trained you to do on this earth is some of the same things you're going to be doing in heaven. Has God ever said there would never be any work? What did He design man to do in Genesis?
Work.
Work.
Tend the garden.
It was to tend the garden. But you know what? When He tended the garden then, it wasn't painful. He didn't go home from work every day like I do. Because it didn't hurt you before sin. And so when we get to the new heaven, the new earth, and the new Jerusalem, work's not going to hurt us anymore. You ain't got to weed the garden. Won't be no more weeds. That come after the curse. And so, man, what a wonderful place it's going to be. We're going to be in the new heaven and the new earth and the new Jerusalem. The new Jerusalem will be the city inside of the new earth. And we'll get to all this in chapter 21, 22, somewhere in there. In about 2 years, we'll be there. Everybody hold on, we're going to go.
You know, it talks about coming, and I know in reading through it before, and I can't find them. There are places in there, I know, that keep talking about who is it that overcomes the world? Who is it that overcomes the world? And it's in Revelation, but I can't put my finger on it right now. In 1 John 5, it says, for whatever is born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God?
That's the overcomers.
That's who overcomes.
Yep.
James, you got me worried.
He'll point it out to you. Everybody is going to have a specific job in heaven. I believe that wholeheartedly. I'm not the only one. There's some smarter people that believe that too. So I didn't just come up with that on my own.
You're the only person I've ever heard tell that.
Really? Heaven is not something that's been taught a lot. I'm thinking about doing a class in Sunday school on it whenever, 6 years from now when I get done with the... If we start back Sunday school, it'll take me 6 years to finish the two books we're going to do first. But then I'm thinking about doing heaven after that because my eyes have been opened up to some things in heaven I've never realized before, and it's really good. I'm just a slow teacher. Most people say you can only teach as fast as the people listen, but y'all can listen a whole lot faster than I can teach because it takes me a while. So, anybody got anything they want to add or any questions or anything we left out tonight? Because Paul's a wise man. He gave me some good wisdom the other night when we got through early. He said, well, we didn't really get through early because you had a lot of conversation afterwards. So he was right. Sometimes I need to allow y'all time for conversation. So. Y'all ain't conversating tonight, though.
David Jeremiah has recently done a new series about heaven, mm-hmm. a book, and you know, answering commonly asked questions about heaven.
There's been several wrote in the last few years. Randy Alcorn wrote a really good one. I mean, it's really good. I ain't finished it, but it's really good.
When you say heaven, there's also not enough discussion, I think, on hell, too.
Right.
reality of the alternative.
People tried to get away from the hellfire and brimstone preaching. I don't know why. I always enjoyed it, even though I had to limp on the way out.
The Lord spoke more about hell than heaven.
Right, sure did. So that's a prime example in the Bible we need to be concerned about, telling people about hell. If you're not concerned about people going to hell or not, you're not concerned.
They say that's one of the main reasons that people don't witness as they should.
Yeah.
And a lot of your churches are into doing what I call humanitarian things, you know. But if you give a person all the food that they need to eat here and they die and go to hell, what good is that?
Yeah. What did they profit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with feeding people food, but we got to feed them spiritual food too. Got to tell them the truth. Anybody else?
Christians love, because if you are not loving enough to tell somebody the truth, then you truly don't love them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reading a book right now about angels from Billy Graham. One that you found in the library. And Billy Graham even spoke, and he said, I don't like teaching about hell, but God commands me to teach about hell.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to know about hell.
Yeah.
But he says it's just one of the subjects that he does not like to teach on.
Yeah.
Because when you start thinking about what's in hell,
yeah,
it's nothing but bad.
Right. Anybody else? I looked at three churches because I thought I might get at least two done, but I got one done. So. Ain't nobody else got anything to say? All right. David, you want to dismiss us?